Subsequent to the fall, how well does the natural world reflect God? Hello, this is The Good Word. I am Dave Thomas, your host this quarter. I teach at Walla Walla University. The question that comes to us today is this one about how well the world or the natural world might reflect God given the fact that sin has tarnished the world. I'm happy to have my conversation partners today, Alden Thompson, a professor of biblical studies at Walla Walla, and Bob Cushman, a doctor of biology and paleontology, an administrator here. Gentlemen, this is a very interesting question. The presumption behind it is that if you make something, that people may learn something about you by what you've made. In the context of creation, it raises the question of whether or not we can learn something about God by looking at creation. And in particular, how valid would that be given the effects of sin in the world? What comments do you have?
Well, I'd like to ask Bob to comment on this because, as I understand it, many of the modern atheists became atheists when they looked at the nature red in tooth and claw. And they said, boy, if there is a God who made people like that, or creatures like that, how in the world can we worship him?
Well, I think the Genesis story gives us a slightly different picture of the original creation, other than tooth and claw, that instead it's the effects of sin that brought about that characteristic. I think that as scientists, it does pose a difficulty for us to look at an imperfect world and a world that's affected by sin and try to understand how it might have looked originally. I think there are glimpses that we can get in the beauty in nature and the way that nature works. But if we were simply to focus on predation and the uglier side of the effects of sin, it would be difficult.
Like viruses?
Yes. It'd be difficult to imagine a world that was perfect, Scripture describes.
Yeah. And actually, your comment raised a very interesting observation that I think I'm correct on, and that is that the very reason that science emerged in the Western world and not in another world is the idea that by careful empirical investigation, we could learn something about the Creator. Now, that hypothesis has broken down, but it's interesting that that's how science started, in a sense, and now it's gone way beyond even a belief in God in many circles, and yet we're still left with the question of how adequately the natural world, broken as it is by sin, can reveal God.
Well, the earliest scientists, the natural philosophers, if you will, were theologians at heart, who did want to better understand how God had created and how sin had impacted and affected that creation.
Yeah.
So they were seeking to understand how that worked.
Now, from a theological point of view, this whole subject, it comes under the category of what's called general revelation, as opposed to specific revelation, where God comes to somebody and leaves them a message. And theologians have postulated that general revelation can be found in about five places. One is the cosmos itself. You can look out into the universe and look at the grandeur and the majesty of that. You can look at human beings and extrapolate from human nature some things about God. You can look into history at various providences, and, you know, the further down the list you go, the less substantial the information becomes because, for example, you can look at the Battle of Dunkirk, and if you're on the Allied side, you could say that this was God acting in history because it makes no military sense to have left a well-armed group of soldiers sitting, waiting while the other ones are evacuated by little boats, you know, hundreds of thousands. That doesn't make sense. There's also the question of aesthetic beauty, which Bob raised, and I do agree that there are some absolutely magnificent things in the world. And somebody suggested recently that even humor might tell us something about God, and I've been thinking about that of late. I wonder if humor is somehow a reflection on God. But, of course, the challenging question here is does this lead people to enough information about God that they can trust him? Any observations on that one?
I think we could make an argument, from a scientific standpoint even, that there are glimpses of God in the processes that we see in nature.
Mm, for example?
Whether it's how the human body works, reproduction, those kinds of processes that are difficult for science to describe how they might have come about. I think give us a glimpse of God's creative ability and power, and if you will, how he thinks.
I remember a comment made by Helen Zauber, who is a fairly ancient person living among us now, if I could use that word. But she came as a new convert to Walla Walla campus, and she said the most powerful religion course she took here was anatomy and physiology. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just looking at how the human body works.
And
just,
all the systems that interrelate and do so in some way seamlessly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just don't have enough willpower to think, as I look at my hand, to think that all could come together just by chance. I don't have enough willpower to come to that conclusion. See? But then I don't have any strong reasons not to worship God. I've had all kinds of positive references, and I think part of the reason why modern scientists and others reject God is that in the name of religion, they were forbidden to see things that they had already seen. Don't you dare see that. You see that, you are a wicked person. Well, once you've seen it, that doesn't respond very well to commands.
Sure. And in all fairness to that approach, I think it does partially depend on your presuppositions. If you choose not to believe in God, then you're going to look for ways that those processes could have come about without him being involved.
Yeah.
And so there are arguments from science that have been made for how those things could have evolved, which if you're not considering God in the equation, that's pretty much what you're left with.
Yeah. And those presuppositions that you adopt really are faith-driven. They're not driven.
Yes.
You can have evidence so that you're not being foolish by that, but it's never coercive evidence. And then once you've established those, it not only affects the data you interpreted, it affects the data you're willing to look at.
Right.
That some data you'll simply say, no, we're not going to include that.
In the context in which you consider those data.
Yeah. So do you think this general revelation, as it's called, is enough to bring a person to faith? There's a volatile theological question for you.
Well, God didn't think so because he sent his son, Jesus Christ.
And he sent prophets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, typically the prophets don't tell you much new. They remind you of things you already knew were true. When David pointed his bony finger, when Nathan pointed his bony finger at David and said, "You are the man," that didn't come as a surprise to David.
No, God surprised. What he was surprised that he got caught.
The surprise that he got caught. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Funny how that works.
So, what about the people who have never heard the gospel? Then I guess they're lost, huh?
Well, that's a very interesting one, and I've often wondered if perhaps God has two plans of salvation.
Oh, no.
For those people who are basket cases, and need lots of help, but there are remarkable people who have done wonderful things. And in the book Desire of Ages, chapter 70, there's a fascinating chapter which Ellen White builds on the parable of the sheep and the goats, Matthew 25. And she says, judgment will turn on just one question. What have you done to help those poor and needy? And then she goes on to say, among the heathen are those who worship God ignorantly, those to whom the light is never brought by human instrumentality, yet they will not perish. Then she shows how their works are evidence show that the Spirit has been working on them. They will be recognized as the children of God. One of the greatest conundrums in our world is how otherwise evil people can do good things.
They can, sometimes very good things.
Schindler's List, what led that man, otherwise in many ways quite immoral, to take all the risks that he did save those people?
Yeah. See? And I think of another comment that's known in the Adventist community about, from Desire of Ages, I think about that among the heathen there are those who have never heard anything about the gospel, but by following the promptings of the Spirit, they get to the point where they actually are doing the work of God, and they have incorporated the principles of the law of God into their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. it does seem that it's a lot more difficult for a person by just observing the cosmos or life to come to faith. But I do think it can happen. Mm-hmm. I do think it can happen.
I think in the educated world it's difficult because you come with a set of presuppositions either one way or the other. Now, if you were creating an experiment to look at this, you'd almost have to have a group of individuals who had been isolated from modern science for them to look at this in the sense of general revelation and coming to belief in a greater being as a consequence of that.
Although I was interested in the experience of Anthony Flew, who was the reigning atheist in England for 70 years, but as he got to his old age, he actually read some arguments from design, which would come out of this category, and opened the door to theism. Now, he took a lot of heat and mockery, some people saying that he was old and senile and was afraid to face death on his own. Wow.
So, but he still did not come to believe in a personal God as revealed in Jesus Christ.
No, that's correct.
There's a huge gulf fixed between those who actually recognize that God revealed himself in Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but he stepped away from the idea of the absence of anything in the beyond. You know, I'm intrigued by the way this whole thing of general revelation works, because it's not that people see different things, it's that they see something more than just those things. I like the illustration of a drought, and you have two farmers, one a believing farmer and one an unbelieving farmer, and how do they see the rain when it comes? And, you know, the unbelieving farmer is likely to say, it's about time, whereas the believing farmer is likely to thank God for the rain. And it's not that the phenomena are different, it's that people see something in addition to that is driven by the assumptions that they are willing to believe.
It's interesting that Philip Jenkins, I don't know if the quote is original with him, but he says, if I hadn't believed it, I never would have seen it with my own eyes.
That's funny. That's kind of a reversal of what we normally have. Bob, a quick question as we run out of time here. Do scientists adjust their findings for the possibility of the fall? And that's a kind of an innocent question, but I don't mean for it to be volatile. But do you know of any way scientists adjust their findings in view of the possibility of the fall?
I think those kinds of conversations come about sometimes when you get a group of Christian scientists together, but it's difficult to do that from an empirical standpoint.
How can you adjust what you've seen?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's not just what you've seen, it's also what you've interpreted from what you've seen.
Yeah. But, or what you might imagine, because none of us were there.
And that's so, true. That's a sobering thought, Bob. Neither the theologian nor the scientist were there.
So we're only seeing a fraction of the available information.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. An interesting subject today. We will be moving along to next week's lesson, which looks at the continuing provisions of God in sustaining creation. So my thanks to you, gentlemen. My thanks to Chad for being engineer today. And my thanks to those of you who listen for Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.